this is in lieu of it, I'm sure.
So I'm going to open the Senate Committee on General Government and Accountability for Wednesday, March 15th.
They've got it all in.
And I'm going to go in the order that we have on the agenda. So Senator, you want to come up and talk to us about, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 384.
So for the record, Arne Roland, Senate District 5, which goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and into Sheridan and Falls City. So a wonderful part of the state, which we hope you enjoy and visit and spend money often. We're here to talk about the state fair. We made an investment in volunteers a few years ago when we transferred the state fair from the Parks Department to this new, I will say, quasi-governmental agency called the State Fair Board. And being a person from a rural area where fairs are really important and having a culminating activity at the State Fair is really important, the thought of losing the State Fair was really frightening to me and to many of my kids and community members. And so it was our job to try to figure out how to make this work. And as we've continued to work at the fair, it has become clear that there are a few things that we didn't finish up the way we should have when we wrote the first bill. So what we have before you today are some clarifications of that. So when we did make the fair board in 2013, there were some aspects of the authorizing legislation that were unclear. Senate Bill 384 addresses a couple of those ambiguities. First, in Senate Bill 384, clarifies that ownership of the real property remains with the state, but ownership of the other property was transferred to the Oregon State Fair Council. This change will allow the council to do such routine things as replacing tractors, buying new office printers without needing to get permission from DAS. Second, the bill makes it clear that any money spent by the State Fair Council to improve or renovate the fairgrounds themselves or buildings on the fairgrounds can be capitalized by the council for purposes of calculating the fiscal performance and health of the State Fair. This is particularly important given that the council has been charged with making the State Fair a profitable operation, something that would be difficult if not impossible to do if the council isn't able to reflect capital improvements accurately on the fair's financial statements. These changes were discussed with DAS prior to the bill being drafted, and DAS is fine with the bill. The council is as well, and we would hope that you would move through the process. We want to reinvest the money that we make in the fair, in the buildings and the place to make it a better and attractive place for people to come. And we've done a really good job of getting attendance up at the fair, and you'll hear more about that from my partners. One thing that we also, there will be an amendment. We've been working with the military department, and they have come up. We were getting it drafted right now, if it hasn't been already, that clarifies there is one part of the grounds that has been used for the military department for a long time. And I hope that we eventually help the military department fix up their assets as well around the state, including moving that particular facility, the kinds of things they do there, out to their other military facilities. And I think that's a goal that they have at some point. But we haven't been real big on building new buildings for state people very often. So we anticipate they're going to share this facility with us. At some point, it will be turned over to the fair. And we want to make sure that they feel comfortable that we aren't trying to take their place away right now. So that's what this clarification does, and you can ask some of the people about it. With that, if you have any questions for me, I'd like to answer them because I have to get to rules so they can start because they need a quorum.
Don't see any.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will turn it over to two people who really know a lot more than me, one of whom was a representative that was I always gave deference to when she was a representative.
Listen. For the record, Vicki Berger, private citizen member of the State Fair Council, one of the few things I retained. Could you use a little good news?
Love good news. Okay. Representative.
3 years ago, I sponsored legislation that changed the model. And we were literally stepping off a cliff, not sure if there was going to be anything solid under us. And for the first few months, the State Fair Council, we were deer in the headlights looking at financials that made no sense and assets that we weren't sure what to do with. And it was, we were so skinny, we were ready to shut the door just in a heartbeat if things didn't go well. And then we hired this Californian by the name of Mike Palusak. He sits next to me, and he has had a little procedure on his throat, and he can't talk. So I get to say whatever I want. And Mike's a big talker. Trust me, this is torture. But he is sitting next to me because if you have a question and I can't answer it, he can tell me. He is an expert on fair and expo operations. He knew what he was doing, and with his help and expertise as a council, we started moving forward on your fair, and we have made incredible progress. It is really exciting to be on the ground floor of something that's going the right direction, and we know it, and we can see that in the financials and in the way that the whole thing is working. We have two fairs under us that were record-breaking and phenomenal. If you weren't there, you should have been. We certainly invited you all. I've learned a lot in this process. Fairs aren't, I mean, you gotta learn the language of fairs like you learn the language of everything. And it's not a single thing. It is a big, ever-changing thing. And people have a lot of entertainment options, and fair seems like an old-fashioned one, but what you do is you make it new again, and that's what we're about. And we don't talk about the fair like you used to, you presented the fair and that's the fair. We talk about having a fair, an experience at the fair that's different than anything else you could get out there. And that's our sort of marketing niche. We want our customers to have an experience that brings them back. Folks want the usual thing at a fair. They want animals, they want crafts, and they want food that they shouldn't eat. And the fact of the matter, they also want veggies now and veggie options. And they want a cleanliness standard that we never experienced. I don't remember when I was a kid. You don't take your kid to the fair and expect them to be touching animals without a washing station, for instance. If you go out there, you'll say, well, there's the animals, and then there's the hand washing station right next to it. And the carnival has to be clean. You have to feel good about your kids interacting in the carnival. These are things that we're working on and that we understand as an organization. Oregon's product base isn't what it used to be. Wheat and beef, you know, we used to be all that. Now we're wine, craft beer, marijuana.
Cannabis.
Oh, sorry. I'm a senator. I'm sorry. I'm an old-fashioned. There's a whole new expectations and a whole new way of doing things. Marketing. Here's my favorite thing that I love that Mike started, and I thought, what a brilliant idea. Every library in the state of Oregon in the summer has a summer reading program for children, and they reward them for reading books over the summer. And we send them kids-free fair tickets as a reward. And they're passed out by these librarians as a reward for their reading. Well, I hate to tell you this, but those kids don't come alone to the fair. They bring an entourage with them. And what's more, those are all barcoded. We can measure the success of that program. We can say, here's how many we gave out, here's how many we got in. And that is another thing that we are working very hard on, modernizing this into the new business model where you have ways of measuring your success using that kind of tool. And that's another thing your fair board is launching itself on, an analysis of why people come, what brings them, how can we enhance that to ensure the success of your fair. These things are next step. We have come through a period where we were so tight with the dollar that we literally didn't do anything that was forward-looking. But now we feel that we are ready to invest in a future fair that has a strong future. And to that end, we need to have our investment show up on our books as a capital asset. And that's what this bill is about. It was overlooked in the original legislation. Trust me, the state still owns the grounds. DAS still owns all the buildings. But we are using this asset in a business sense, and we anything that we need to purchase, and we are in a place where we're going to need to purchase things to move us forward, but we need to have them on the books as our asset, things like that hand washing station or new tractor equipment or computer equipment, because we will be purchasing them from our own resources, and we need to be able to put them on our books, or else we're not going to look like we're moving forward at all. So that's what we're about. We appreciate your attention, and I just have one message for you, senators. Being on the Fair Board is way more fun than what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Thank you very much. I understand there's an amendment, so we're not going to be able to move this today, but...
I have understood that perhaps if we could put on the record the position that... And we can bring up military people, but we do not own or control that portion of the grounds that is under the jurisdiction of the military department, and this bill does not change that in any way. We don't believe it does. So the amendment clarified that. I'm hoping that if we could put that on the record, that we would not need necessarily an amendment, but that's for the military department to decide. But we have no objection.
Okay, well, with that, maybe I'll ask the military department to come up and respond to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if Daz wants to come along, that's great.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, Lindsay Baker with the Department of Administrative Services. So I am here today. I was asked to come testify on DAS's position on Senate Bill 384, with the understanding, as was just touched on, that one, this only applies to personal property and not to real property. Real property will continue to be an asset of DAS. And that the fairground property and facilities does not include the Salem Armory, as will hopefully be reflected in the amendments that are forthcoming. With that understanding, DAS is neutral on the bill.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, I'm Dave Stuckey. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. I think we had this opportunity to talk with the chair sponsor here earlier today, Senator Roblin, and he has submitted a dash one. We look forward to that dash one to just make a minor tweak. It's adding seven words. And so from that standpoint, we'd be feel really comfortable. We believe that this Fair Board is inconsistent with that, or is consistent with that. So that's what we would like to put on record.
Great. Any questions for these folks? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Got one more. Susan Kephart.
Hi. Chair Riley and committee members, I don't testify very often, but
over there.
I have the opportunity. There are some copies.
We got it.
It's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Anyway, I'm a Oregon citizen, have been an Oregon citizen since 1981. And I'm also a Willamette University professor, with my specialty being in biology. I'm here because I've spent considerable time out at Fairgrounds Oak Grove and some of the adjoining parts of the fairgrounds over a number of years. I had a National Science Foundation grant to study camas across the entire country. That is actually finishing up this year, so I don't really have a vested interest in necessarily doing more research on Massia, but I'm really knowledgeable of the site and wanted to highlight some of the ecological and other values. So most importantly, I'm neutral at this point on the bill. It just seemed, I only learned about this very late yesterday, so I sent this morning. And what's most important, which is in paragraph 2 of the statement that I sent, is that there is some means of protection in perpetuity for the ecological, cultural, and historical value of this area, some of which I've outlined here, but there are other values as well, including the Native American Heritage Site. The sign's now missing, but basically that's been honored over the years. But with the management changing, I want to make sure there's somewhere on record that Oak Grove, which is also valuable for heritage trees, for the fauna that's there, and the green space is also valued by neighborhood groups. they don't probably think about the wetlands. That's probably a nuisance. But in fact, it's a value for the city of Salem generally. More importantly, one thing I didn't mention in here, I think you can perhaps read these other things and you might have questions, is the there are ways of, and there's been interested, not by me but by others, in potentially using seed collections from those sites or using it to for sustainable ways, and that's certainly an option, but whether that's the interest or whether it's for the visual space that neighbors enjoy or whether it's the fact that unusual plants and other things grow there. The camas provides a large amount of nectar. Oregon has the highest diversity of camas in the nation, and in the populations in Salem are important. I was a longtime fan of the state fair, have been, so I think it's valuable when you go to a fair to have some natural community present, and there are booths and shade and other things there. So, but you can read much of that. I open it to questions you might have, and I hope to have clarification of how that's going to be, how we're going to protect these sites so that they don't get sold off or paved over, because I think the other services they provide are much greater for the public. Thank you.
Questions?
No.
Well, I think that from my point of view, I suspect that the people who are now going to be working with this will have very similar values to yours, and I think you should communicate with them, and I really think that they will agree with almost everything you said.
I don't doubt that, but we never know who's going to be on the state council or
next.
What corporation's mm-hmm. running, and there's provisions here for the land to be sold potentially under certain conditions or managed in different ways. I'm not an expert on how you interpret bill language, okay, and I just saw this late yesterday.
Okay.
But I and many others who know about this now just recently would like there to be some kind of legal protection for particularly the fairgrounds Oak Grove site, but potentially a certain amount of green space that benefits all. Yes, Senator
Brzezinski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Based on the testimony we heard from DAS, Department of Administrative Services, my understanding is the land is not going to be transferred to the board or to the fairgrounds. It stays in the possession of the state. So there's a very regimental process for us to put that or any other state property up for sale. And so if your concern is that potentially the council may change and they may want it, someone may want to sell it, they don't have the authority to sell the land.
No, I understand. I wasn't saying the council per se. It could be DAS may have other economic concerns they're looking at. It needs to be on the record, the value of that.
Okay, thank you.
But thank you. That helps very much, Senator Riley and Brzezinski.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
So we do have more work to do on this, so I'm just going to close this public hearing. And I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 393. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Ted Farioli, District 30. And before I launch into my description of why I think Senate Bill 393 is critical to the future of the state of Oregon, I was asked the other day for a little-known fact. And Senator Riley, would you care to share the little-known connection between ourselves?
So it turns out that I am a descendant of a Roman senator named Feriolus. And I've been doing genealogy for many, many years, like 50 years, and turned up this this interesting fact that I'm actually descended from Senator Feriolus.
And it is quite likely that 50 generations ago,
there was
a connection in the family.
So we're probably about 100 cousins.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another little-known fact that both of us will have to defend or refute as we go forward. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 393, I have the distinct sense, after years of serving in the legislature, of the limitations of our offices. And I think all of you know, as you experience the interaction between the three branches of government, it really is a scrum. You know, it reminds me of something you see on a rugby field or a soccer field where people are all pushing and shoving in different directions. Of course, that is exactly what is intended by our foundational documents, the Constitution. No branch is preeminent to the others. We're co-equal. But what we find sometimes is that some branches are more co-equal than others, especially if, as your careers like mine have unfolded, you've seen a law passed where an agency either rewrites the intent of the law or just decides flat out they're not going to enforce it. If you check Article 5, Section 10 of the Constitution, it basically requires the executive branch to faithfully execute the legislature's law, and faithfully should have quotes around it in the Constitution, because sometimes as you look back, you wonder how that could be a faithful execution. The purpose of Senate Bill 393 is simply to say, if a state agency or if the executive branch establishes a formal or informal policy of not enforcing an enactment of the legislature, the least they should do is come back and inform the committee of the Legislative Assembly that had authority and jurisdiction over that law. That's what 393 does. Let me suggest what it does not do, and I think that's just as important. It does not include local officials such as county district attorneys or sheriffs. They do have prosecutorial discretion, and it's based on a wide variety of circumstances and resources that they have at their disposal. And for reasons that are important to them, they do make decisions about what level of enforcement, what level of prosecution is reflective of the community values. This bill does not do anything to interfere with that. But it would include organizations like DEQ, LCDC, and others. If they chose not to enforce an enactment of the legislature, they'd at least have to circle back and say, here's why we did it. That may at least stimulate, I think, some rather interesting conversations. And that's the purpose of Senate Bill 393, Mr. Chair.
Questions? No.
Oh, no, I don't know if I have a question. I just ditto what he said.
Ditto, okay.
Ditto is, I was just leaning forward.
Ditto is good. Okay, thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 393, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 393. Do we have a motion?
Chair Riley, I move Senate Bill 393 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair DeBoer moves Senate Bill 393 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Senator Haas.
Yeah. It just strikes me it's ironic that if we were to pass this law, there's nothing to enforce, that this law would be enforced.
Mr. Chair, if that's in the form of a question, I would say at least I'd have to come back and tell you what.
Comment.
Further discussion? Objections? Senate Bill 393 passes and goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. So, thank you very much. A carrier, anybody want to volunteer? Would you like to carry this, Senator?
Senator Brzezinski has made a delegation, and I accept.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 434A.
And, Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing me to appear again before the committee on Senate Bill 434. You all, I think, are aware of a pretty serious wildfire that moved through Grant County in the John Day area. It was devastating to more than 40 homes, which were completely lost in the Berry Creek complex fire. What, unfortunately, we discovered was that although we do have a wildfire damage relief fund, the threshold for qualification of that is it disqualifies people from any sort of relief if they have 75% of the federal poverty level based on household income. A quick check of those tables shows that if a family of two loses everything in a fire and they have an income level of $12,015, they are disqualified from receiving even the modicum of relief that comes from the Wildfire Damage Financial Relief Fund. So, Mr. Chairman, what we would like you to do is to ask a task force to be created to look at this issue to see if recommendations for changing that threshold are in order. We would think that these thresholds were set at a point in time in the distant past, but at a time when these thresholds seemed reasonable. They do not seem reasonable to me now. And I think a task force might conclude that there is a better level of threshold that could be set. The objective of the Wildfire Damage Financial Relief Fund is to actually provide help to people and not to provide the illusion of help only to have folks disqualified if they even have a minimal income stream. So, Mr. Chair, this would require a work group to be put together to analyze the facts of these situations and perhaps update those tables.
Thank you. So you just, at the end, mentioned that a work group could be put together as opposed to a task force.
Mr. Chair, let me look at my talking points. It's called a task force.
So,
Mr. Chair, and I am not aware of any prejudice that the chair might have against task forces, but we certainly can change this to
a work group.
At your pleasure.
That would be, very much appreciated. And would you like to lead that work group?
Mr. Chair, I would be very happy to help provide information on the very real and unfortunate experiences we had with almost 50 families in the John Day area. But we also have examples from throughout the state of Oregon, southern Oregon, in several different wildfire complexes, and western Oregon as well. So, yes, Mr. Chairman, if that's your pleasure.
And Senator Thatcher, would you like to work on that work group as well? I'm asking
at your pleasure, sir.
I think that would be good if you would work on that and see if we can come up with something that will work. If we get something good and bring a bill, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So with that, I'm going to close this public hearing, and I think that's everything.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Before we go off the record, and since Senator Ferriero is here, going back to the 393,
yeah.
It would be great on the record, because I'm looking at the definition of 174.112, and I'm glad that he put on the record here, but I think it's going to be very important to ensure that the district attorneys are not being captured here, because they are part of the executive branch. And I think that it will go a long ways to make certain there's not confusion.
Mr. Chair, let me reiterate the issue of prosecutorial discretion with district attorneys and other law enforcement personnel. It's a real cornerstone of community policing and community justice. Nothing in the bill is intended to interfere with that prosecutorial discretion.
So I'm going to reopen a work session on Senate Bill 393 and put that on the record.
Senator Ferrioli put it on the record here, but I'm just thinking it's going to be very important to have it as part of the floor
yep.
discussion.
I agree, but I want to put that on the record that we definitely this is not intended in any way to impede that or affect district attorneys or local jurisdictions, law enforcement jurisdictions. So I'm going to close that work session and close the committee. Thank you very much, everybody. Close the committee. Thank you very much, everybody. Work session and...